Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 17. And we are just days from the season opener, Week 1, against the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland, a 1 o'clock kickoff, Dave. And we're into kind of the normal work week, if you will. Ben Roethlisberger spoke yesterday, and of course, Mike Tomlin's Tuesday presser. Different format this year. Not televised on Root Sport for the sports for those locally who like to see that. I'm also not in attendance this year. A little bit different for me. But and an abbreviated press conference. I don't know if it's because it was Week 1, Dave, and he didn't really go through the Browns in depth, or if the format will be different this year. But let's start with that. And it's football week, and as we do on Wednesdays, we'll have a Browns beat writer. Scott Pitrak will join us at the back of the show to preview. Kind of, we've done the Bengals and the Ravens for the AFC North, and obviously opening with the Browns, we skipped them. So we'll do a little bit more than we might usually do talking Browns today.
Yeah, absolutely, and it does feel like football season. Got all but one of my fantasy drafts out of the way so far. I have one more later on this night tonight. So definitely time to start talking about the regular season here. And Mike Tomlin did meet the media, as you said, on Tuesday. And yeah, I mean, he didn't spend a lot, really, as you said, going over the Browns. I mean, he hit all the high spots talking about, you know, Joe Thomas, obviously, and a few other key players on both sides of football, and later on, obviously, said they're not game planning for rookie quarterback DeShone Kizer. They're more game planning for Hugh Jackson. And that's the right answer there as well too, because we've seen Steeler fans, of course, and the Steelers have played the Bengals over the years quite a bit as well, and should be pretty up to speed with all those little waggles that Hugh Jackson, very creative play caller. I mean, if there's one guy to like when it comes to offensive scheme and play calling, Hugh Jackson does a lot with a little, if you ask me. But when you talk about what Tomlin had to say, I think we start with the injury report there, and you know, he says we feel really good right now, and that's a good sign talking about the overall health of the team. But with that said, Mike Mitchell, who's been sidelined all preseason and most of training camp, with a hamstring injury, he was reportedly able to practice some on Monday. To what degree? Nobody's really allowed to say. And also, you know, the Steelers re-signed Steven Johnson back to the roster after they cut him, over the weekend there. And he's reportedly still dealing with a hamstring injury. And Mike Tomlin said you could probably characterize both those guys as questionable. And if you go by what kind of happened throughout the preseason and then on into the finale and all, those really look like the only two players at this point that I think, you know, are in serious jeopardy of missing or at very least being listed ending the week as questionable when it comes to the Steelers injury report.
Yeah, I'm with you on all of that. And let's get into just a little bit of that and the depth chart here as we get ready for Week 1 and the roster. For those who missed our podcast on Monday, I hope you take a chance to listen to that, because we went into kind of our thoughts on how things didn't really break the way Dave or I or virtually anybody else who covers the team really closely thought they would. Obviously, it's impossible to forecast trades. We saw a couple of those, and then just some moves that were a little different than some of us expected at the end of the day with where things are. So that's where the in-depth stuff is, Dave, but let's talk about where things are. One is Mike Mitchell. If I were going to guess today whether Mike Mitchell goes or not, I'd put it at 50-50. He missed a ton of time getting work in on Monday, obviously, was a big part of things. We'll see what happens today with him, how much work he gets in. And if he's running with the ones and isn't listed on the – we'll get our first injury report today, by the way. So that'll be a guideline for us to use. Stevie Johnson gets re-signed. We've talked a lot about, you know, you've got to have seven guys down, and with a healthy team, you know, is it going to be Stevie Johnson or Arthur Motes who is the guy who's down? Because it's not going to be L.J. Ford. It's not going to be any other linebackers. And it would be a bit of a surprise if they dressed all 10. So something to keep in mind. But, Dave, let me ask you this about Mike Mitchell. On the depth chart, they list J.J. Wilcox as the backup free safety. They list Robert Golden behind Sean Davis on the strong. Those positions have become much more interchangeable over the years, and it wouldn't be a surprise to see guys move back and forth between the positions. I asked a question on Twitter yesterday, you know, is it possible that J.J. Wilcox, a guy who started 38 games with Dallas, so let's be clear, this guy has started a lot in the league in his 4 years with Dallas. He never played with Tampa. He signed with Tampa this offseason, so he was learning their defense, but he never started a game or played a game for them. Is it possible with a week, with 4 years of experience, you can plug him in? Now, Mike made the comment. This is not – he's not exactly Le'Veon Bell. You know, we've had Le'Veon Bell in our system. He knows what to do. And Mike made it sound like plugging in Le'Veon Bell, while not quote-unquote easy, is relatively straightforward. And with J.J. Wilcox, that would be different. So two of the beat writers got back at me and said, came back to me and said, you know, Robert Golden would be the heavy favorite to start if Mike Mitchell can't go. And we all saw how much Robert Golden struggled during the preseason. Dave, can you envision any scenario if Mike Mitchell can't go where they would turn to J.J. Wilcox?
Personally, I think they would turn to Robert Golden first just because of the short time. One of the things about – I love watching Hard Knocks and all these documentaries, and I forget what they called the Cardinals one during the offseason as well, too, on Amazon. It's just even though players come from other systems and all, you know, you hear them talk about, well, you know, they do a lot of things the same way, but the terminology is different. There's something to be said about having time in a system, I think. And you know, I think that's going to be the rough thing with a safety. Now, look, Joe Hayden's going to face the same thing, but he's been in a little bit longer there. I think they can get the basics down with him, but, you know, when you're needing such a good, strong communicator on that back end, too, at the safety position, it just – to me, I just think it's going to be rushing it to get a guy like J.J. Wilcox up to speed. Now, do I eventually think that he's going to easily surpass Robert Golden as the first safety off the bench? Absolutely, I do. But I think even though you don't need to look past Cleveland, I think you need to consider your opponent here in this situation, and I think you need to set yourself up for no mental errors. You know, no miscommunication or anything along those lines. So I personally would expect Robert Golden to start if Mike Mitchell can't in this game. And you know, that's what I'm kind of looking for until J.J. Wilcox gets up to speed.
Okay, so the next most pertinent question or most frequently asked question by our listeners and I think just people in general is, look, this team hasn't had a kick returner since who knows when. It's been really years. I mean, Dre Archer was the guy who had the job but didn't excel at the job. They've been looking for guys along the way. Dave and I have been critical of how Mike has used his personnel on his roster because he's had some capable guys that he didn't even give the opportunity to when things weren't working out. And so this year it was Niall Davis was going to be the guy, didn't make the final 53. Fitz was one of the guys last year. He didn't make the final 53. So it leaves a lot of question marks. Sammy Coates was a guy, and he didn't make the final 53. So that leaves the door wide open. And the two guys listed at the top of the depth chart are basically J.J. Smith-Schuster and Artie Burns. So we know Smith-Schuster has missed a bunch of practice, and there's still, you know, there is a little bit of question of whether he dresses week one because of the Steelers. We talked about the 10 linebackers. They're going to dress six wide receivers. And then Artie Burns. And, Artie was on the roster last year and didn't give him an opportunity to return kicks, even, you know, when he wasn't the starting corner or when he was the starting corner. And we know historically, whether it's just a coincidence or not, Mike Tomlin has not used defensive backs, historically defensive players, to return kicks. It's been, you know, there've been Alan Rossum is a guy who was a kick returner was his job. We saw Justin Gilbert, you know, very briefly last year, but it just hasn't been his way. So those are the top two guys, Dave. I'm trying to remember who was third on that depth chart. Was it?
Terrell Watson.
All right, Terrell Watson. So another guy kind of new to the roster who's never played in an NFL game. So you've got two guys who've never played in an NFL game, and you've got a defensive back who's one of your two starting corners, you know, in terms of an important position. And we all know the people talk about being injured on returns, and it's much more frequent that guys – now, not just the returner, but guys get injured on kick returns rather than punt returns. So what are your thoughts?
I don't know which way they're going to go right now. You know, you would think the only way at this point that you can probably try to get Juju a helmet would be to get him involved in special teams in some way. This is a kid that going back to his college career at USC, he only returned 16 kickoffs for 185 yards. If you break out a calculator out, 16 for 185, that's not too great.
They're not much more than 10. You know, do the math.
Yeah, obviously we don't know if he was fielding the kicks at his own 30-yard line. If you run it back 10, you're at the 40. That's good news right there. I haven't gone back and looked at the distances all on that. But and to make matters even worse, I think 12 or 13 of those kickoffs at USC came during his first year at USC. So he's only returned like, you know, 2, 3, 4 kickoffs over the course of the last 2 years at USC. Now, he does have good hands, and I don't know about the coaching that kind of goes into that, but I would suggest catch the ball and run straight.
I'm with you.
That would be my strategy there. I mean, look, Juju's a physical guy, right? I mean, Juju is a guy that if you look at his tape as a wide receiver, was good after the catch. Is that something that will play into maybe him, you know, if he can learn from Danny Smith and learn, you know, where to find these lanes and creases and whatnot? Will it help him? I mean, he's obviously got some decent speed as well and some good change of the direction. I guess, hey, why not throw him back there for the first game? The only big thing that you worry about is, you know, first game on the road. You kind of worry about, you know, and look, and he's the youngest kid in the NFL or youngest draft pick this year as well. So you kind of worry about the stage maybe being kind of overwhelming there, but he seems like a level-headed kid. I would give him first crack at it more than I would Artie Burns, because I damn sure don't want my starting cornerback out there involved in some car crashes. And be quite honest with you, Juju Smith's put together a little bit better, you know, from a thickness standpoint than Artie Burns is. So
yeah, and just to follow on that is Watson's put together better than both of them. And first of all, I think my approach would be, if the ball's over the goal line this week, take a knee. I mean, I don't really care what the rest of the scenario is. If it's over the goal line this week, take a knee. Let's get to the 25.
That's great coaching, David.
There you go.
I would do the same thing. You know, obviously, if it comes down right at the goal line, they need to make a decision there. And if there's any doubt in your head, you better probably run that thing out there. But I'm with you. If it's two yards or deeper in the end zone, just take a damn knee and bring that thing out to the 25, because that's better than almost anything anybody did last year.
Right.
Returning kickoffs for the Steelers. So I think that has a net positive effect back there. Just don't fumble it. Take a clean knee and get off the field. And quite obviously, hopefully, Cleveland's not kicking off a lot in this game anyway, if you know what I mean.
Right. And last year we would see kind of the stagger, and this, you know, the Steelers were so bad about this too in terms of lining guys up so other teams could always kick away from the perceived deep threat, even though they didn't have one. The Steelers never mixed it up. It was always vanilla. It was just one of the things that I was more critical about last year that were just basic you know, again, it's not game day planning. It's just basic deception or you know, technique or thinking about things. The Steelers didn't do this well. The guys in front of the deep kicker, so Fitz was the up back, if you will. And then generally it was Vince Williams as a guy who was in the role kind of to be a little bit further up than that. I doubt Vince will be in that role this year as the starting inside backer. So if he's not, Dave, is that a role where all of a sudden you put LJ Fort? LJ Fort's not quite as big as Vince. They don't have a kind of a guy Vince's size to just throw into that role. Could it be? You know, is there an offensive lineman you put in that role, or is that pretty much you think it'll be Vince or LJ Fort there?
Well, remember they got Vance McDonald. I think he's done some of that kind of stuff. You know, with San Francisco.
He would be the only one of the tight ends who could possibly be in that role.
Yeah, I mean, do you want? I mean, you could put Jesse out there, but I mean, do you really want Jesse out there when he's quote unquote right now? Technically, I think Jesse's going to play a handful of special team snaps. And
yeah, I agree with you.
Here's the bad thing about the preseason. Not only do we not get, you know, the all 22 looks during the preseason, but when you're trying to break down the coverage teams, kickoff and punt, you know, on both sides of it, man, the TV view, it makes it so damn hard to do that because you don't see all the
They're running guys in and out all the time.
Right. You don't see the guys running down the field. You can't get a clean look at their jersey numbers and all. And plus, on top of it, you have guys double, you know, two sets of numbers out there during preseason games as well, too, because of the large amount of rosters. It's just so hard to get a handle. And plus, too, the you know, special teams coordinator isn't so much looking for units working together as he is trying to work individual players in individual spots on special teams. So you just can't look across the board and say, okay, this was a kickoff returning team here. That's a clue that this might be how it is, you know, during the season. And I've tried to do that several times over the preseason, and spinning my wheels. I mean, it's a total waste of time when you do that kind of stuff. So, look, we'll be able to definitely start tracking that kind of and charting that kind of stuff starting in week one when we get the all 22 tape. But here's the thing. Anytime we talk about this kind of stuff, it just seems like you and I forever going back, I mean, eight seasons talking about how nice would it be for the Steelers to get consistent, you know, at least maybe one return every two games past their own 40 or even into across midfield. I mean, how many times outside of defensive turnovers do we get to see the offense get a free running start, if you will, with some great field position? Obviously, the defense did a little bit of better job, I think, at creating some turnovers last year. But, you know, those kind of things, those short fields add up in the long run, albeit via turnovers or special teams. And I think Danny Smith really needs to do a better job with his units this year. And I thought they had some success at points during the preseason here. But obviously, that doesn't mean anything until you get into the regular season here. But it really, keep your fingers crossed as far as these kick returners go. And as far as punt returners go, it looks like it's going to be Antonio Brown again. It's either going to be Antonio Brown or Eli Rogers right now. And maybe Eli at some point during the regular season can finally get the confidence and take that job on full time.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see as well, Dave. So, you know, there's the depth chart again. You know, look, the depth chart, it's hard to put any serious credence in the depth chart when, you know, they list Cam Hayward as the left defensive end and Stephon Tuitt as the right defensive end, when for years they've played the flip side, when they say Tyler Matakevich is the backup at both spots but don't list him as the backup at both spots. You know, it's just – it's a piece of paper, and I wouldn't read anything more into it. So there's not a lot to take away from the depth chart. Let me ask you this, Dave, and I think this would be the more interesting stuff that we should get into before we get to the Browns. When you look at this roster today, and I talked a lot about this after the draft, where the Steelers were, after free agency and after the draft, and I said it was clear to me that this is as good a position as the Steelers have been in based on their roster, the starting talent they have, the depth they have behind it, the salary cap space they have, their health, which continued largely through the preseason. This is as good a situation as they've been in since at least 2010 when they went with the Super Bowl, when they went to the Super Bowl. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, right now, especially what has transpired over the course of last 7 or 10 days or so. If you asked any Steelers fan coming out of training camp, what's their biggest concern? They're probably going to tell you tight end, cornerback, and safety depth. Well, the team has now addressed all three of those concerns, over the course of the last 7 to 10 days here. So, yes, it's a young defense. Still, when you look at guys like Sean Davis and Artie Burns and Javon Hargrave, but I mean outside of that, I mean yeah, you got T.J. Watt in there, but he's going to probably do some rotating with James Harrison there. There, if you're a Steelers fan right now, you should be thinking that it's Super Bowl or bust. I mean, really. As you mentioned, this team is healthy. They've got arguably top five, top three, top two offensive line. I don't, depending on probably who you ask. I mean, this is a unit that has played a lot together. And if they stay healthy, and even, this is an offensive line that I think that can withstand an injury or two, depending on where it happens at. You look at their key positions, wide receiver, running back. They're in good shape there. Obviously, Martavis Bryant coming back is huge. You even look at tight end now with the addition of a guy like Vance McDonald. Tight end's probably still your weakest position, but something that you can get past. So I think you look at the defense and, there's something that we continue to say all the time is, can this defense continue to get or start getting consistent pressure with four or less players? And if they can, they're going to that's going to help any secondary out, let alone the guys that the Steelers have back there now. And the three draft picks that you had last year that played considerable amount of time are supposed to take a step forward this year in their second year. In a nutshell, yeah, this is the best entering the season I think Steeler fans have felt in a long time, and they all should be expecting this team to not only run away with the AFC North, but make a strong run at the Super Bowl. They should be in the Super Bowl. Anything less than that I think is very, very disappointing.
Well, yeah, I would say AFC Championship game. Look, the Patriots are still the better team on paper coming into the season, so I mean, the Patriots are obviously going to have the exact same attitude. So I don't know. I don't think AFC Championship. I think it'd be disappointing if the Steelers don't. And that, look, that's a damn high bar to say it's a disappointing season if you don't get to the AFC Championship game. But that's where I am. If they get to the AFC Championship game and lose, depending on how they lose, obviously, and all of that stuff. But, they might get beat by a better team. And maybe it's the Patriots. Maybe it's somebody else. But it certainly looks like, we can talk about the Chiefs, the Raiders, the Dolphins, I don't know, pick the Texans, pick your, the team that you think might also be a challenger. But to me, the Steelers, the first half of the schedule, where it certainly looks like it's possible for them to go 7-1, and if they win at Kansas City, it would not be all that far-fetched to think that they could go 8-0. They should be favored in all these games that they're favored at Kansas City. And that'll set them up for a more difficult second half, but a chance to kind of put themselves in position for home field and everything else that comes with that. Dave, ESPN ran an article, ESPN Insider. It's football, the Football Outsiders guys, who, if you're a fan of that, and I am, the work that they do, they're going to have their projections and stuff coming out today and tomorrow. So check that out. But they ran, the teams with the that would be damaged the most. It's basically kind of the teams with the worst depth at each position group. And so, they left quarterback out because obviously that every team is going to be hurt if you lose your starting quarterback. But, the point was, if for the Steelers at tight end, if Jesse James were to go down, it's not a massive loss. You're going to have to sign somebody to have a third tight end. But, the difference between Jesse James and Vance McDonald isn't so great. So they're talking about if you lose a top guy, you don't have anybody to come in and replace him. And they picked the Steelers at inside linebacker, Dave. And, because Ryan Shazier and Vince Williams, and they looked at, Fort and Matakevich behind him and said, if certainly if you lose a guy like Shazier, the Steelers don't have anybody to replace him. It's not close, and that is a massive drop-off. Certainly I think it's a drop-off with Vince as well, although, as people know, I'm pretty bullish on L.J. Fort right now. Would you agree that you know, Ryan Shazier is the least replaceable, aside from Ben, and I guess maybe we could say Le'Veon, but let's talk about the defensive side of the ball. Is Ryan Shazier the least replaceable guy?
Wow. that's a great question. Boy, Cameron Hayward makes such an impact on that defense.
I didn't have him the second half of last year and did okay.
Yeah. But I mean, would they have done even better? You know, getting pressure on a guy like Brady in the playoffs or something like that. Ryan Shazier makes a lot of plays, but I mean, once again, they have won without this guy on the field as well, right? I mean, he's missed
but they had, you know, they did have, and whatever you think of them, they did have Vince and Sean Spence to go to, and so now it's Fort and Matakevich, and the question is, you know, are those guys capable of stepping in and doing the job?
Let me tell you, L.J. Fort's, not, you know, fans of all 31 other teams along with 3/4 of the Steelers fan base probably can't name L.J. Fort for you, but this guy had a great preseason, man. I mean, he really did, and this is a guy that I was questioning, you know, is it going to be L.J. Fort or Stevie Johnson making the final 53-man roster several months ago there, but L.J. Fort showed some great recognition. One thing's for sure, he knows that defense in and out. And for him to be kind of a weak, you know, Mac inside linebacker, if you will, I thought he played well. Now that doesn't mean I'm willing to trade Ryan Shazier away right now. But I think they could get by without Ryan Shazier for the are you telling me whole season? I mean, because I think Steeler fans.
Well, the question is he the most irreplaceable guy?
For a full season, I would probably go that way, maybe. I would be willing to take my chances if you let me pick another player. If you only told me Shazier would miss, you know, 3 games at the most during a stretch type of thing.
Yeah. What's the Steelers' weakest position? Is it tight end?
Both sides of the ball?
Yeah, both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I would go there, I think.
Is corner still in the equation?
I think until we find out what Joe Hayden is, you know.
Safety in the equation?
You know, as long as Mike Mitchell's Mike Mitchell, you know, they can get. Hey, you know, the thing is, Dave, when you talk about this defense, I keep wanting to go back to everything will be okay. You know, there'll be no panic button pushing if this front four can get pressure. You know, now I do like the fact that. If they play more, more man or bump and run on earlier downs, and just don't let these damn quarterbacks get a first and 10 throw out of their hands in 2.3 seconds and get 6 yards. I mean, that's the thing that drives I think most crazy there, because you're setting up in easy down and distances, 2nd and 4 and 2nd and 3 situations there. So, I guess I'm less concerned about the defensive backs. You know, I'm glad to obviously see him add a guy like Joe Hayden and go out and get a depth guy like Wilcox. But we've seen some pretty crappy secondaries for the Steelers over the years do okay when they get pressure up front, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely the key. And Dave and I on Friday's podcast will spend a lot of time kind of making some projections for the season and going through those types of things that we like to do each week as the season goes on. But we'll get into some season-long stuff. You know, aside from all the obvious things that are concerns, you can pick any guy and say, okay, injury concerns with Ben or Bell or AB or Shazier or whomever it is. Okay, aside from that, When you look at this Steeler team, some of the things I'll be watching for, Dave, here early in, and they're working to, you think about the defensive backfield, you think of the tops in the defensive backfield, the guys on the roster, you think versus the start of the end of the 2015 season. Okay, so you've got an entirely new defensive backfield. Artie Burns is new. Sean Davis is new. Joe Hayden's new. That's three of your four starters right there. Mike Hilton's new. That's your nickelback. Cody Sensabaugh's new. That's your next guy behind him. So J.J. Wilcox is new. And then some of these guys, you know, two of these guys just picked up this week. So when you think about the Steelers in the secondary, let's not use the lazy narrative of the secondary always stinks because these guys always stink. This is a completely different group of guys, okay? Mike Mitchell's the carryover. William Gay probably isn't going to see the field that much on even the nickel, and maybe not with J.J. Wilcox there, maybe the dime. He may be relegated to a special teams player. So don't let the narrative be that the same group of guys, they always stink. They may not be good, but it is a different group of guys. So one, Dave, I'll be interested to watch scheme-wise. You know, we've heard different reports, and, you know, the preseason isn't a great guide about whether they're going to play more bump and more man coverage. I don't expect it to be dramatically different, but now they have much greater option to do that with Burns and Hayden than they did with, say, you know, Cockrell and Burns in his rookie year, or Cockrell and Gay, or whomever it was, you know, started last year, it was Cockrell and Gay, right? So they have the option to do that. That's probably the most interesting thing I'll be looking for first. And then second is, you know, kind of how they use four wide receiver sets, how often and how much, and you know, with JJ, how quickly is he going to be implemented? I think Martavis Bryant will be kind of not missing a step type of stuff. And then, you know, Le'Veon's, you know, out of the backfield, check down in the, you know, is he split wide? Those types of things. More kind of how they line up formation-wise on the offense.
Yeah, I think you'll see more of that kind of that faux 4-3, you know, over front as well, you know.
With JJ up on the or Bud or both of them right on the top. Do you expect to see those guys ever with hands down?
Boy, I mean, that's – it's possible you could occasionally see him with hands down, but you know what they like to do with this is they like to take the nose tackle and kind of have a tilted nose with him and play that over front and then move one of those outside linebackers off the ball, either it be TJ or Bud Dupree, and both have done that as well. So that makes it a difficult a little bit difficult to run up the middle on, obviously. And I think that's one of the key things to kind of look for early on here. And then obviously at that point on passing situations, you want to see if they can get pressure with whoever they leave as the end of the line. Outside linebacker as the edge rusher on those plays. You can do so much with blitzing, different types of blitzes from that kind of alignment as well, too. And as we saw T.J. Watt during his college career, he really does a good job of when he's able to work back inside as a pass rusher as well, too. So, yeah, and, you know, Alex and I think you and I talked a little bit about dime. I expect a serious uptick in percentage of total defensive snaps out of dime personnel this year, and that, you know, such a thing would do well in getting Vince Williams off the field in certain situations that you might not necessarily want him on the field for as well. And I think because of the tight personnel, you know, I think they might be able to run a little bit more base than what they have over the last few years. You know, the base has really slipped down into the
25%, 25 tops.
Yeah, 20%, 22%, 18%. I forget what the exact number was that Alex charted on that. But I think you could see a little bit of an uptick on that a little bit, you know, especially if they're able to play more that 4-3 over front as well, too. So those are just little things right there. Look, you got to do something different in today's NFL. The Dick LeBeau mantra of stop the run on first down, tackle the catch, and don't give up the big play. just doesn't work. You got to be able to play up on those receivers whenever you want. Moving forward, and you're going to have to expose yourself to taking the risk of getting beat downfield. And I think you're going to see a few more, hopefully, turnovers happen by the Steelers' defense because of quarterbacks trying to force the ball down the field in areas where it probably doesn't belong because of that easy stuff being taken away from them on the outside.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll get into, as they say on Friday, we'll get into kind of the number of snaps we expect guys to play, all this type of stuff about, how we expect the season to go, really. And we'll have our picks for week one. If you haven't heard the news, there was some speculation with Hurricane Irma, which is a historically strong storm coming through the islands right now and going to hit Florida here over the next 48 hours. The Dolphins-Buccaneers game, it's kind of a strange twist here. The Dolphins are obviously already short a home game because they play in London this year, and these two teams have the same bye week. It's just an odd coincidence that it worked out that way, and so they have decided to move this game to Sunday's game to November 16th in Miami because of the hurricane. There was some speculation that Heinz Field in Pittsburgh or the Link in Philadelphia would host this game on Sunday, which would have been interesting to see if Steeler fans, what kind of turnout people had for a game that I would assume would have been, free possibly, or, $10 to get a ticket, something like that, if anybody would have gone to the game. But they've decided to have that game, and they will play 16 straight games. And, Dave, some people are throwing their arms up about this. I mean, obviously the league used to play, games, every week. I think it's unfortunate for these two teams, but I don't think it's that big a deal. What's your take on it?
Well, it's unfortunate that now they have to play 16 straight games, but they also now get another week to enter the regular season with a full head of steam as well. Look, I mean, I can understand the fan bases being upset. Our bye week's gone now, but look, it is what it is. You're just gonna have to move on with it. So,
and obviously, our first thoughts and are with everybody in the Dominican Republic and the islands, the St. Kitts and Anguilla and all the other places that are suffering through the storm, and the people of South Florida and up the coast. Our thoughts are first with them. Football secondary, but obviously, we're talking football.
Should the league, and look, I mean, it'd be another week to stretch it out and make more money for the league. Should the league institute teams having two bye weeks during a year to help with player safety or whatnot? Do you think the players want it?
Well, see, I don't know that a bye week helps with player safety. It's football is the thing that impacts player safety. So, does not playing football and relaxing for a week, make you better, better equipped to handle what's going to happen the following week? I have no idea about that. Would I be fine with it? Of course. If it stretches the football season out a week, doesn't bother me any. It's one of these things. We talk about how the NBA and the NHL and Major League Baseball seasons are too long, but I don't think anybody says football's too long. It only lasts 3 months. I mean, September, October, 4 months, through December, and then, for the lucky few, you get the playoffs. So the football season, football calendar is long because it's 12 months. But football season, I don't think anybody thinks is too long, unless you just think, I know people don't, some people don't like the Thursday night games. They think the quality's low. But, yeah, I don't know if they added a bye week in there for everybody, it wouldn't bother me any.
Do you think we'll ever see an 18-game season?
I thought that was very likely 3 years ago. I think it's very much less likely now.
I had the same thought pattern as that. Several years ago, I thought, well, maybe there's a possibility, but now I think I'll be surprised, man. If anything, maybe they need to think about taking one or two games away, right? I mean,
yeah, the balance is—it's the whole thing. Like, do you expand from 32 teams? The way the NFL is set up right now in terms of balanced schedules, everything working perfectly, four divisions, two conferences of four divisions of four teams each. Everything works perfectly for scheduling and balance purposes. So I think something dramatic would have to come along to change that in the short term.
Before we get to our guest here talking about Browns and all, real quick, though, and I just lost my damn train of thought there. I was going to ask you one other. Oh, one other thought about the depth chart here. Your thoughts on T.J. Watt, you know, being listed as a starter over James Harrison?
No surprise. I mean, as you know, we didn't really get into the detail of Mike's press conference, but you know, there wasn't a lot of, there wasn't a lot to chew on. But JJ's kind of run with the ones from the get go, and Joey Porter right out of the chute said he's going to be the starter. So, I mean, that's the, to me, it was the least surprising thing there. It would have been, the surprising thing would have been James listed as the number one guy. And again, David and I will get into this on Friday, and feel free to email us your guesses on the kind of, you know, how many snaps is James Harrison going to play this year? You know, what do you expect from JJ and various guys who are going to be the guys we obviously talk about, because we know what's going to happen with the O-line and Ben and AB and Le'Veon and that kind of stuff. But give us your thoughts on that. But Dave, yeah, James Harrison, I expect to be a situational pass rusher who, you know, is only getting kind of 25% or less of the snaps.
Yeah, I think, they want to use him as a relief pitcher. And, you know, more than anything, hey, if you can keep James fresher for later in the season, great. But, we'll see how that ultimately plays out. But you drafted TJ for a reason. You saw that early on in the preseason he can play a lot of snaps. You would think his football conditioning has gotten even better since week one of the preseason as well. So throw him out there in the deep end of the pool, you know, I guess, and let's run with it. Tomlin and the consequences of Le'Veon Bell's time away, do you like how he handled that?
Yeah, he said, and the question was good too. The question, for those who didn't hear it, was, you know, when you said there'd be consequences, did you mean punitive, which obviously means some kind of internal punishment or something, you know, maybe not playing for a quarter or something like that, which is, it was a good question. And Mike's answer was, no, of course not. We mean the consequences of how he will perform as a result of just coming in and playing without having had all the reps and all the practice time that everybody else had. I thought Mike handled it beautifully. I think we all knew what the answer was. Mike Tomlin's not the kind of guy. I mean, he treats guys like men. He's not the guy to be doling out punishment. Just so everybody understands, Le'Veon Bell didn't break any rules. He followed the letter of the law in terms of, you know, he reported when he signed his tender. He wasn't under contract. I know people want him in. I know people were using the term holdout. It wasn't a term that I used. He chose not to report because he had that option. Other guys under contract, that was not an option for them. That's a holdout. But Bell chose a different route, and, you know, he didn't do anything wrong. It didn't make, you know, a lot of people happy. But I had no problem with how all of this went down, and I said that from the beginning.
Yeah, I agree with that as well, too. All right, we need to get to our interview here, right?
Yeah, we're going to talk some Browns with Scott Petrak next. Welcome back, and of course, it's Wednesday, and Wednesday week one. And as we mentioned during the preseason, we previewed the AFC North with the Ravens and the Bengals, but we held off on the Browns because we knew Browns were the week one opponent, 1 o'clock kickoff in Cleveland. We're pleased to be joined again this year by Scott Petrak, who covers the Browns for the Chronicle Telegram of Dyna Gazette. And the Chronicle Telegram has gone online now, and you can find all of Scott's work, great stuff this week and during the deadline, the analysis of the roster moves and where the Browns stand coming into the season. You can find all of that at brownszone.com, and you can follow Scott on Twitter at his name, Scott, S-C-O-T-T, Petrak, P-E-T-R-A-K. Scott, thanks for taking the time to be with us here on the Terrible Podcast.
Hey, sure thing, anytime.
Okay, Scott. So I've been one of the guys outside of Cleveland who has been a fan of what the Browns did 2 years ago. They cleaned house and they brought in a new management group. And I've had some familiarity with these guys in the past. Dave Podesta, through all his work in Major League Baseball, and just kind of like the general direction that they were moving. Last year, we saw kind of the roster stripping that they did, all the draft picks, and again, more of the same this year. And I think the number I saw that you put out, or one of your colleagues put out, is they're only about, you know, 8 or 10 guys left from the end of the 2015 season on this Browns roster. Hugh Jackson at the helm seems to have an idea of where they want to go. Give us your thoughts of kind of since the end of the draft, what's happened during the rest of the offseason, where the Browns were coming into camp, and where you think they're positioned starting the season.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I get what you're saying about having a plan in place, and I do think they've laid out the blueprint and they're following it. My only issue is it feels like it's moving really slowly. You know, we saw the Joe Hayden cut, and then he winds up in Pittsburgh. John Greco, guys that anybody that's near 30 or over 30, they get rid of, and I think there's only three guys on the roster that are 30 or over. And it just means it's going to be hard to win now, and I'm not sure when the focus is going to turn to, all right, we need to start winning, because there's so many young guys on the roster. They keep churning the receiver position. They brought three new receivers in over the weekend.
Right.
Four quarterbacks on the roster. None of them have won a game in the league. So I see the big picture. I just think it might be frustrating for fans who say, hey, if we play the Steelers on Sunday, how about giving us the best chance to win? And I'm not sure you can say that if Joe Hayden's playing on the other team.
Yeah, certainly Steelers fans look at that as well. Before we get into Kizer and a bunch of the guys, let me just ask you about Hugh Jackson. I mean, kind of what we're talking about initially here with Sashi and Dave Podesta is at 30,000 feet as an organization. Tell us about what you've seen in the time you spent with Hugh Jackson as a leader. You know, one of the things, I think Mike Tomlin is an extraordinarily good leader. Guys like playing for him. What do you think of Hugh Jackson as a leader of the organization and as a guy to run, you know, run the Browns over the next 5 years?
Yeah, I think he's a great guy. I really do. You know, the guys play hard for him. We saw it last year. They lost their first 14 games, and guys are still playing hard. They get that win finally on Christmas Eve. I think guys respect him. Joe Thomas has been through all these coaches, right? And I asked him the other day, and I don't think he was just giving me a line. He said Hugh's his favorite coach he's ever had because he's a combination of balancing the discipline with, okay, this is football, let's have fun, and a good guy with the X's and O's. He knows how to call a game. He knows how to set up an offense. You know, he's still the coordinator here. He's still the play caller. So I think he's the right guy. It just becomes, will they be able to give him enough time and enough talent to take advantage of his skill set?
Scott, when you look at what the Browns did earlier in the offseason, I think we all saw what was going to happen with Brock Osweiler, that was kind of a smoke and mirrors thing, just a temporary placeholder. With that said, and then they went in and they drafted DeShone Kizer. Do you still think, even though probably Kizer is the best quarterback right now on the roster, do you think they're doing him a disservice by throwing him into the fire this early? Do you think Hugh Jackson should have let Cody Kessler at least open up the season? Or is the thought being that Kaiser's just that far ahead of Kessler and this offensive line in Cleveland now really looks good on paper overall that it's time to go ahead and throw Kizer into the deep end of the pool? In short, you know, is this going to be another Derek Carr, situation here, or David Carr, I'm sorry, situation where you put a guy in way too soon and you ruin his confidence and all?
Right. Yeah. See, I've gone back and forth on that, and I've come to, at least my opinion, is if a guy can't handle losing early and the struggles that happen when you're a rookie, then he's not cut out to be your franchise quarterback anyway. You mentioned David Carr, but Derek started 0-10 in Oakland a couple of years ago, and now he's an MVP candidate. You know, I think Troy Aikman was 0-11 as a rookie in Dallas. So guys live through the struggles.
Didn't Peyton go 1-13?
I think he was 3-13. Yeah. So guys can rebound from that, and I think in this situation, it became, okay, is he ready? Can we put him out there and he can function in an NFL offense and do what we need him to do? And Hugh Jackson was slow and brought him along at a nice pace and then said, you know what? Yes, this kid can function. And I think he showed that in the preseason. And the other part of the equation is the other options are awful. Osweiler, I think you could have made an argument if he stuck around that he gives you the best chance to win early in the season just because he's played in the league for so long. But it was not a clear-cut decision. And as far as Kessler, I think, has regressed. I'm not sure he belongs in the league. And there's nobody else on this roster besides DeShone Kizer. So it's his job. Hugh is not going to have a quick hook. He's going to ride it out with the rookie. because not only does he benefit from getting the experience, let's say he flops. The Browns are going to have another high pick next year. They have a bunch of high draft picks. They might be in the market for a quarterback again. So this year is crucial for Kizer to develop and for the organization to find out if he's really the real deal.
Yeah, and Dave, before you go on, I'll tell you, Scott, Kizer was one of my favorite picks in the entire draft. I felt like it was a great lottery pick for them in the second round. After the three first-round picks that they got, if he's there, if nobody's there, no big deal. But they get a free look at him, and if he's awful, obviously they're in the mix for Rosen and Darnold and whatever, because they're probably not going to be very good. So I love the pick.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I tell you what, I just finished a long feature story on Deshaun, talked to his college coordinator and all his high school coaches. And I really think this kid's got what it takes. Now, that doesn't mean he'll be a star, but he's a smart kid, like super, super smart kid, processes the game well. And then we've seen all the physical traits. So it's just a matter of, in the pressure of the moment, in the fourth quarter and on third down, can he make enough good throws? Because I think he's got everything else you need to be good at this level.
When you look at the wide receiver group here, now obviously they acquired Sammy Coates from the Steelers, and we've studied Sammy now for two years in a training camp here. This guy's a one-trick pony right now, and that's all he's been. He needs to improve on his route running and obviously has confidence issues right now. But going back, I know it's easy to do in a rear-view mirror and after the fact. Do you think the Browns made a mistake in letting Terrell Pryor get away?
I do. You know what? And the thing is, when they did it, I thought, okay, Kenny Britt is probably an equal player or maybe even a slight upgrade because he's been in the league for a long time and he has that experience. He's coming off a 1,000-yard season. And I don't know how much you can read into the preseason, but Kenny Britt has not been good. He let Brock Osweiler down numerous times inside the red zone. He dropped the ball for Kizer inside the red zone. And I think Pryor's poised for a big year. So I do think that was a mistake. And I also think it was a mistake not trying to even further upgrade the position when all along we knew that they were deficient there. That all those second-year guys that they drafted, Ricardo Lewis and Rashard Higgins and Jordan Payton, weren't that good. And they wind up cutting Higgins and cutting Payton, and then they have to trade for Coates. They have to claim two guys off waivers over the weekend. My worry for Kizer is that they just haven't supported him with enough playmakers at the receiver and tight end position.
When you look at, again, we go back to the lack of success. Yeah, I know they drafted in that when they had, 13 picks in 2016. It seemed like every other pick was a wide receiver, and they didn't – you get Corey Coleman and you see what happens with the rest of them. Most of those guys aren't around anymore. When you look at what they did in the offseason to solidify that offensive line, and then they draft Myles Garrett with the first pick, it does look like they're going back to the old philosophy, build – from inside to out. So the offensive line should be very good. We'll see what happens with the defensive line. Philosophically, was that the idea? And what do you think of the two lines?
Yeah, there's no doubt that that's what they decided to do. And they've gotten better. And if when you look at position group by position group, you start with the lines, and those are two of the strengths of the team. I think you could throw in running back as well. I have no problem with going that way. I think it makes sense. And I do think Kizer will be helped by a strong line and what looks like it should be a good running game. So I think that's a smart move. I think they have depth on defensive line for sure, on offensive line. If they sustained a big injury, I'm not sure how well they would handle it. You can probably say that about a lot of teams in the league. But that part of the philosophy, I won't argue with. Like I said, the issue over the offseason for me was not getting enough playmakers to support whoever was going to play quarterback.
When looking at this and the situation, the way I look at it, I think about the Tennessee Titans, right? They have Mariota. He comes in. They decide that they're going to, get the big tackles. They're going to pound the ball with the running game. And Mariota's developed really nicely. It's taken some time. Look, they haven't been good. And now maybe they take that step forward. Maybe that's what the Browns can look forward to next year. The running backs, you mentioned those two guys. How do you expect is Crowell Are they going to split time? Is Duke Johnson the kind of change of pace third down back, or how are they going to work those two guys?
Yeah, I think Crowell will be the workhorse, get the bulk of the carries. I think he's poised for a big year. It's his contract year. It wouldn't shock me if he ran for 1,300, 1,400 yards and 10 touchdowns if they're able to get down inside the red zone. And then you'll see Duke Johnson is that third down back. And even, I tell you what, we talked about the lack of receivers. Duke Johnson spent a lot of time in training camp split out at receiver. So you'll see him there on third down. He could turn into that slot guy, which means, you know, Crowell might even play some third downs. And then they have a rookie. He's a seventh-round pick, Matthew Days, that had a really good preseason in camp. If, you know, if they didn't have so many other big-name rookies like Garrett and Kaiser and Peppers, you would have heard a lot more about Matthew Days.
With the defense this year, of course, Greg Williams, we all know his history and how aggressive he likes to be. And then you add in, you know, Miles Garrett and, look, another very talented guy, Jabril Peppers, a guy that, you know, kind of unsure of how they were going to use him initially when they drafted him. But, you know, he's a playmaker that you have to have on the field. Jason McCourty, obviously, you know, a veteran, going to probably try to take over for Joe Hayden there. I would think, you know, I know they had an injury at the middle linebacker position during the preseason. But all in all, this is probably a defense that's going to at least help you stay in a few games, right? I mean, is that your thought on this, that they're going to be able to stay in and potentially win a few games because of the way their defense is probably going to play this year?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Here's what I'll say. The defense is markedly improved over where it was last year, and it starts with Greg Williams getting hired as a coordinator. He's changed the attitude. He's changed the culture, changed the scheme. Then they go and add Garrett and Peppers, and they sign Jamie Collins long-term. And all of a sudden, you have some pieces and some playmaking pieces on defense. If they exceed expectations in the win total, it will be because the defense drags them there and supports the offense and gives them good field position with turnovers and forces a bunch of three and outs, all those things that you need if your offense isn't going to carry you. Now, what worries me is if the offense can't stay on the field or the offense, you know, turns it over itself, putting the defense in bad spots. I've just seen promising defenses here get worn down from being on the field all day. But I do think this defense is legit. It'll be interesting to see how it translates to the regular season, especially when, you know, I expect Pittsburgh to put up a bunch of points because we all know how talented the Steelers are. I'm not sure we'll get the best gauge of how good the Browns defense is week one, just because I think Pittsburgh has so much firepower.
When I look at this defense, I know it's hard to do just off of preseason tape so far, and perhaps you can, as part of this question, update the health of Danny Shelton for this opener here, their fine defensive tackle. But to me, it seems like the biggest concern Browns fans should have about their defense is being run on in specifically, well, any direction, but I think up the middle more than anything else. Is that a correct assessment?
Yeah, when you watch the preseason, they definitely got gashed a few times, not as badly as we've seen in the past. And I think the tackling was much more solid this year. But I would worry about the run defense. You know, I think Miles Garrett has to prove that he can handle the run. You know, I expect teams to go at him right away and kind of get him on his heels a little bit. As far as Shelton, I thought he was a lot better last year and should help in the middle. I'm not sure if he'll be ready to go Sunday. I think he'll be one of those questionable guys. I saw him run last week, and he looked pretty good running, so I think that was encouraging. But it was a 3 to 6 week injury, and he's probably been out 3 weeks, so I don't think I can say for sure that they'll be back. And I do worry about depth at the linebacker and in the secondary. They only kept 5 linebackers. Only 3 of them have really played much in the league. They only have 8 defensive backs as of right now, 4 corners. I only like 3 of them. So, you know, I think an injury there could also spell doom for him.
Yeah, really odd roster structure here to open the season with 4 quarterbacks, as you mentioned, you know, picking up Josh Woodrum, who's a guy most people probably have never heard of. And as you say, you know, 4 corners, the Steelers, you know, the question was, you know, how many corners are the Steelers going to carry? and with so few linebackers. Yeah, that, very odd. Can you just give us an update? You know, we've talked about Garrett a little bit and Kaiser. Can you give us an update on Peppers and Njoku? I know Peppers is scheduled to be the kick and punt returner, which that'll be fun for, you know, everybody to watch and see how he excels at that. And then anybody else in the draft class who caught your eye?
Yeah, I'll start. Njoku has not gotten up to speed fast enough. Part of it, he struggled early in camp with some drops and some fumbles. Then he had a sore back, and then he hurt an ankle. I don't think he's ready to contribute in a big way early, and it might take a year or two because he just turned 21. Yep. So I think if you have high hopes for him early, you might be disappointed. Peppers has really blown me away. I wasn't sure that there was a natural spot for him on defense, and I thought, I didn't love the pick at 25 because I didn't think he had a spot on defense. Well, I'll tell you what, he's taking the free safety. He can go sideline to sideline. He'll put a big hit on a guy. He's got good ball skills. We've seen him as a returner, and he's super smart. I've been really impressed with him. I think he'll have an impact defensively in the return game, and it wouldn't shock me if you see him play a little bit of Wildcat quarterback. So I've really been impressed with him. And then, you know, they got a couple of young defensive tackles, Larry Ogunjobi and Caleb Brantley, who will be in the rotation. Like, Ogunjobi's further ahead than Brantley because Brantley was hurt a while. But those are the guys. The top of the draft class is what has stood out because it was so top-loaded with the three number ones and then Kaiser in the second round.
Yeah, and that's what you need to be a good team. You need to hit on those guys. Scott, appreciate your time. Just big picture, is this a Browns team that'll go from, you know, their situation last year to 5 or 6 wins? I mean, I don't expect the Ravens to be great. I expect the Bengals to be pretty good. Where do you see the Browns?
You know what? If they got to 5 or 6, I think that would be a huge success. And I think the organizations feel great about the direction they're headed because you go from 1 to 5 or 6, that's significant. I don't quite see that. I just don't think the offense, when you're relying on a rookie quarterback, no matter how much potential he has, and a questionable group of receivers and tight ends, I think they're going to struggle to score points. And to me, that means probably 4 wins, which is an improvement, but not enough to get super excited about.
And do you have a prediction for the game?
You know what? I mean, you got to like the Steelers by a bunch. You know, I just think the Steelers are so much more talented at the critical positions that, you know, I mean, I haven't come up with the final score, but, you know, 27-10 sounds about the right ballpark.
Yeah. Scott, man, great stuff. I really appreciate you taking the time, and we look forward to talking to you later in the season.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Okay, Scott Petrak. Check him out on Twitter. You can follow him at his name, Scott Petrak. And we've got all the information. Check out brownzone.com for everything going on with the Browns this week. All right, Dave, good stuff from Scott. And we've been banging out kind of a little hour plus on Monday with the roster and with this. But we've got plenty to cover, and I imagine we'll have a full show on Friday as we'll get into kind of what we expect to see, some kind of season-wide predictions for individual players and, of course, the team as a whole, and we'll give our picks for the first week of games. So a fun week so far. We'll get our first injury report today. Go to SteelersDepot.com to get all the latest on that. Hopefully this is an injury report that lists 2 guys did they drop probable? So 2 guys is questionable and nobody else, hopefully.
Yeah, you know, and the first 2 of the week are just designations of limited, full, you know, that those kind of things, you know, as well there. So we won't get a complete classification of questionable or doubtful or out until Friday when the Friday injury report comes out. And yeah, about these things running along, David. David and I have decided not to charge extra for any podcast that goes over 70 minutes there. So someone tweeted us out the other day telling us a good job of recapping all that we did in the amount of time that we did, you know, all that had happened the last couple of days there on that last podcast there. And I responded back. I said I'd go 3 hours or so if David would let me, and I know he would verify that as well too. But and I know he wouldn't want to on top of it. Talking to me for 60 or 70 minutes 3 times a week has got to be brutal on him. Folks, in all seriousness, though, we appreciate everybody listening. We look forward to bringing you another great season of Steelers football. We'll get into more predictions here on the Friday show. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We will not charge this year for the podcast. However, if you want to donate to the cause, please go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. And David, until Friday.
Yeah, until Friday. And remember, Dave and I are currently, unemployed. Nobody's paying us. So give us a shot as I try to get back into the workforce here this fall. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.